Hello, and welcome to the My Heart and Mind podcast, where it's all about creating the feel-good mindset so you can make the most of every moment and reap the benefits of getting the most happiness out of life. And now, over to your host, Sally Crawley.
Hello, and welcome to episode 20 of the My Heart and Mind podcast. My name's Sally Crawley, and today it's a bit of a weird one. It's me being interviewed by Brian Simpson. A few months ago, I invited Brian, the heart attack survivor, to be a guest on my podcast. He turned the tables on me and invited me back to be his guest on an IGTV show. I'm okay with audio, but video was a little bit testing. But nevertheless, I felt the fear and I did it anyway. Brian has kindly allowed me to use the audio to share some of my story with you. I'm not going to say too much, but you will get to find out why I think I'm so lucky, despite having my leg in plaster and having a heart attack at the same time. Then 8 weeks later, having a cancer diagnosis that couldn't be operated on, as my event was so recent that I was also on ticagrelor, an antiplatelet medication. So it's all about me. So enough from me right now and over to me a few weeks ago.
So on that note, why don't you introduce yourself, where you're from, and tell people your story?
Okay, thank you. And it's a real eye-opener in many ways to know what it's like for my guests. Thank you so much for inviting me on. I'm Sally Crawley. I'm from Cambridgeshire in the UK. And my story started in 2016. I was feeling quite good about life. I'd lost a lot of weight. I was beginning to feel healthy. I was taking up exercise again. I've always loved martial arts. And so I went back and started doing martial art with my best friend, Tang Soo Do. No, my best friend isn't Tang Soo Do, but the martial arts was. So I was feeling pretty good about life and was enjoying starting doing something different. In that class, I actually ruptured my Achilles tendon. And there is some connection, weirdly, that I found out since between having an injury to the Achilles and having a heart attack. But I'm not really 100% sure of it. But nevertheless, I ended up going to hospital and I was plaster cast from my toe to my knee. And the hospital laughed at me and said, "You're going to wish you broke your ankle because it's going to take forever for this to heal. It really takes a long, long time for the tendons to knit together." So I went home and I thought, right, okay, we're going to have a long ride here. I couldn't drive, so I started to work from home. And about 4 weeks after the rupture, I started to feel that I was getting back into the life, that doing the job was making me feel, right, okay, I can carry on like this. But one night in March 2016, my friend came and stayed with me and we had a takeaway. And I went to bed and it was really kind of weird because I didn't feel right, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. So I went to bed and fell asleep quite quickly. I felt quite tired. And in hindsight, when I think back, even before I ruptured my Achilles, I think that I had been feeling fatigued and there were some side effects of not being well enough, but you just brush them off. You don't really think about it. It's, you know, you just get on with life. So I'm in bed and all of a sudden at midnight, I wake up and I am dripping with sweat. I have the most horrendous heartburn. And it felt like trapped wind. Heartburn isn't quite the right word for it. So I got out of bed with my plaster cast, toggled to the bathroom, didn't know which end to put over the toilet, but just went back to bed thinking to myself, there must have been something wrong in the takeaway. It must be, you know, food poisoning or something like that. Got into bed. And I couldn't sleep. I just was wide awake with this immense pain of indigestion. And because I was in a plaster cast, it took me ages to get up and down the stairs. So I rang mobile to my friend who was sleeping downstairs and said, jokingly, "I think I'm having a heart attack." No, I'm not really. I've just got indigestion. Could you bring me up some indigestion tablets, please? So I took the indigestion tablets and they made no difference whatsoever at all. I just sat up all night and I wasn't bothered by sleeplessness. I didn't feel particularly tired. Time had no meaning. I wasn't sitting there wishing away the night. I just couldn't sleep. Then the next morning came round and I kind of got up and I came downstairs and I just didn't feel right, but I didn't feel desperately ill. I just had this indigestion. My arms felt a little bit tingly. It kind of, not hurt, not pain, just a little bit tingly. But I put that down to the fact that I was on crutches. So I was like lugging my body around the house and wherever I was going. Well, I went back to bed because I just felt so bad. I then kind of didn't sleep because I couldn't sleep. I just stared at the TV watching Netflix or just rubbish, not paying any attention. Went back up to the hospital. My friend took me because obviously I couldn't drive because I was having to have plaster cast changes quite regularly because you start off with a pointy toe and then gradually they bring it up. I was in the fracture clinic and my friend said, would you like to go to A&E? You've still got this really bad indigestion. And I was like, no, I'm fine. I sat, I talked to the nurses, I told them what a rubbish time I'd been having, how I hadn't slept, about the sweating, and they didn't put two and two together at all. Probably because I have a bit of a sense of humour, so I was laughing and joking about it at the same time. So that was kind of, so it was a Friday that I went to bed, Saturday I woke up with the heartburn, went through Saturday, had my plaster changed, got to the Sunday, still felt really unwell, still had the indigestion. I had tried every indigestion remedy under the sun, but still carried on thinking, it's just me. I've just got, it must be the food poisoning. Never really thought about my arms at all. Still couldn't sleep. And then got up Monday morning and I had a meeting, was driven to the meeting, sat, had the meeting, still feeling absolutely rubbish, but just about got through it. Got home. My friend then left, went back down to London, and I laid on the sofa and I was like, I cannot face the two meetings I've got tomorrow. I just can't face it. So I rang, cancelled them. Still laying on the couch, feeling a bit sorry for myself. I thought, I'll phone the GP. I can't have indigestion for this long. So I asked if the doctor could come out and see me because by then I was stuck at home and I didn't have a car. And the doctor rang me back and she just chatted with me for a little while. And she said, we really need you to come down to the surgery because there's tests that we can do in the surgery that we can't carry out when you are at home. Is there somebody that you can get to give you a lift or could you get a taxi? So I rang my dad, as you do, the hero of the day, and dad drove me down to the surgery. I waited my appointment time, went in to see the doctor, moaning about this indigestion. She was more interested in the fact that I was on crutches. But she sat me down, and just by chance, well, I say by chance, I don't know, as part of routine, I suppose, she decided to listen to my heart. And in the middle of the conversation, she just went quite quiet and she said, I think I'm going to get you to go and have an ECG. Can you go into the next room? I'll get the nurse. And it was really, you know, hindsight again, it was really, really quickly how she kind of got me from that point into the other room. Nurse I knew very well, so I was chatting away. She stuck all of the electrodes over my body. We're just chatting about normal things. And then she went quiet and she said, I'll be back in a moment. And the doctor came into the room with me and she said, you have either got an ulcer or what we really think is that you're having a heart attack. And I just went, if it's all right with you, I think I'll just have the ulcer. And it was, I just was in disbelief. How could I be having a heart attack? You know, I was perfectly fine. I hadn't got that crushing chest pain. My left arm was perfectly okay. And I was just in complete denial, shock. It was almost as if it was happening to somebody else. So the doctor rang through to our local hospital and made arrangements for me to go there. And she said, "Who's with you?" So I said, "My dad." She went and got my dad from the waiting room and she said, "You need to take her to the hospital. Take her home, pack a bag for her, and take her straight to the hospital. You will be quicker than getting her an ambulance to get her there." And so literally we came home, grabbed the bag, because I'm feeling okay. I'm just, you know, what's going on? So I packed my own bag, got in the car, drove to the hospital. As soon as I gave my name to the desk, they had got me a wheelchair and they'd taken me straight into resus, and I had a team of people just descended on me. And it transpires that actually I think they were a bit freaked out because they didn't know how I was actually laying there laughing and joking and saying, "Can I have a cup of coffee?" Because all I wanted was a cup of coffee. They let me have a cup of coffee, which I thought was really nice and made it a bit normal for me. And they obviously put a blood clot buster into my system and they probably pumped me with some other things, which just made my humour worse. And when I'm nervous, my humour is not really that funny, but they let me get away with it. And then all of a sudden, I was rushed out from Hinchinbrook Hospital, which is the local hospital, put into an ambulance and blue lighted to Papworth, which actually is only 5 minutes down the road from me. So I've been taken away to be brought back home again, literally. And it was like something out of Casualty or Holby. They're like medical programs, that are a series that we have in this country. I was pushed on the trolley straight out the back of the ambulance. They were getting my consent verbally as I was going through. They took me straight into the cath lab, pumped me full of fentanyl, and then went in through my wrist. And they found that I had 100% blockage, that I also had calcification of my artery. And the words on the report were, "It was surprising how much calcification there was in someone so young." And being 52, I thought that was quite a good comment to make. Not the calcification, but the 52, being young. And I suppose the fentanyl made it, it was surreal. It was really surreal. But I'm laying there on the table with this wire in my heart with the big screens down the side, and I can actually see what is going on, but it just didn't make any sense to me. So that I got told to shut up at one point because I was talking all the way through the procedure, and I think that the cardiologist had got to that tricky bit. And I was also desperate to go to the toilet, and I remember saying, "Let me up, can I go to the toilet, please?"
Okay, that's okay. Well, you know, it's an opportunity to pause for a second because there's a couple of things I just wanted to bring up. So the first thing that's really present for me is, you know, and it's not just you, it happens a lot, is the denial that you had, that you know, that these symptoms were, you know, you downplayed them, and heartburn, and, you know, very common, especially in women, because the symptoms... Yes. You know, you had weren't textbook, you know, so it's interesting. Again, like, so it's really great for anybody who's watching, especially women out there, that, you know, it's really important to know what the symptoms are, and it's important to trust yourself and to act on them if you have them, because again, time is muscle. Now I know there's some other sides of the story that I want to get to that I think, you know, is important as well, but again, just the fact that like you said, you didn't have any arm pain. You were more indigestion. You know, you didn't have any pressure. It's kind of similar to me in a way. You know, I was just thinking, I didn't realize the timing of it. So I had my heart attack only a couple months before you, actually. Mine was January 17th when I had mine in 2016. So you were a few months behind me. I was 47, right. Almost 48, actually 48, I guess, really, because I was just on the cusp of my birthday. And so it's interesting. I didn't realize that. But so tell me, so your blockage, you had 100% blockage. Was it you remember which artery it was?
It was the right side.
The right coronary?
Yep. Okay. which I think, I mean, I was told actually I is incredibly lucky because I went for 3+ days without seeking any intervention. My heart was starved of blood for that amount of time. So I have my heart is damaged due to that. And because it is the part of the heart that pumps the blood to the lungs and not to the rest of the body, it isn't actually pump, it doesn't have to do quite as much work. So you will hear me, and I have said to people before, I am so lucky in so many ways because it happened to be that side. But shall I go on and tell the rest of the story?
Yeah, so there's a link with the Achilles, because you talked about your Achilles and the plaster cast and all that. But there's another element that I think is, again, important to talk about and share. And it may be unique because you were, you know, because of your situation. But please continue.
Yeah. So because I was in a plaster cast and essentially immobile, what the hospitals do now is they give you blood thinners. So you inject yourself in the stomach every single day, and it actually is to stop blood clots, surprisingly enough. My view on it is that had I not had those injections, I wouldn't be sitting having this conversation with you today, because the blockage was 100% and yet still the blood managed to get through because it was thin enough to go through the smaller arteries of the heart. So that is my, you know, it sounds awful. I am so pleased that I ruptured my Achilles because it actually saved my life, I think, because, you know, and especially when I've got such calcification in my artery as well, which makes it hard in case it shatters while they were doing the stents. So I was obviously in the high dependency unit after I'd been stented, and actually the nurses and the doctors were a bit like, again, it's like I'm sitting there with a purple plaster cast on my leg and they're like, what's she doing in this hospital? And it was like, oh, actually, she's had a cardiac event as well. And because, you know, I mean, I know you know yourself, you're not allowed to lift anything heavy for any period of time after a heart attack until you started to build up the strength back up again. Well, I'm lugging my body around, so they made me go back to a wheelchair. So life for me took a very, very different turn because I was really isolated. I was stuck at home. I was in a wheelchair, which makes life wheeling around the kitchen trying to cook dinner for me and my daughter, because I'm a single parent and my daughter was living at home then. She's now at university. And it was really tough. But coupled with that, I hit the floor because I thought I was going to be fixed in the hospital. I was going to be sent home. I didn't imagine for the life of me that I would have so many tablets that I needed to take, that I would have to make so many changes in my diet, even though actually my diet was really healthy. I had been exercising beforehand. My stress levels, and you and I have had conversations about stress, my stress levels were through the roof leading up to my heart attack. So maybe there was something in that. And seeing as I'm a therapist and a hypnotherapist as well, it's quite surprising, but it proves we're human. But I was as weak as a kitten. I could not get up the stairs. Okay, I know I was in a wheelchair, but I couldn't crawl up the stairs all the way. I had to stop halfway, and I just couldn't believe how much my life had changed. I sat and cried. I went through depression. I was so, so sad. I also kind of was still going through the denial that you mentioned, because it was like, how could it happen to me? Surely they might have got it wrong. Did I have heart disease? Had I had a cardiac a heart attack? I just, at the time, it just was not a reality that I wanted to accept. And the things that started to occur to me were, I'll never be able to do this, and I won't be able to do that. And you know, now I look back and I think to myself, actually, there are some things that I can't do, but actually it's a mindset thing. You know, some things you have to be careful about. I felt that life was unfair. I felt powerless. I just hit the bottom, absolute rock bottom. And as I said, being an NLP practitioner, a life coach and a hypnotherapist, again, luck. If I hadn't had the knowledge and the experience to be able to identify what was happening to me, who knows how I would have progressed. But I just knew that the power was in me. It was my mindset that needed to be changed. Mm-hmm. So carrying on with the story, whilst I was struggling, really, really struggling with the mental health side of recovery, bearing in mind also I couldn't go to cardiac rehab because I had been told I wouldn't be able to walk or I wouldn't be able to run or exercise impact on my leg for probably a year. I had to wait until I was able to actually cycle. I didn't know anyone that had had a heart attack, so it was really, really difficult for me. But I found people like you, not particularly you, but on Facebook there are loads of groups. And I got my solace from actually lurking and hiding because I didn't want and didn't feel able to, but I could watch what other people were saying about their feelings, about their medications, about their treatment, which stopped me feeling so alone. So speaking about being alone, 8 weeks after my heart attack, I've got lots of best friends, all for different reasons, but my other best friend came to visit me and she knew that I had not wanted to go out, that I was terrified of leaving the house, that I was really worried that I was going to have another heart attack, basically, and I wouldn't recognise it. And she persuaded me to go to a restaurant literally outside my doctor's surgery. Just love that girl. And I felt safe enough to go. And while we were having lunch together, she started talking to me about mammograms and that she'd been called back for one. So that evening, I decided to check myself because I realised that I hadn't paid any attention for a while and I found a lump. And again, I went into denial. It was like, nope, I'm not having that. There's nothing else wrong with me. I'm fine. But eventually my thoughts went to, you need to get this checked out. And I'm lucky that Doc came and took me out for lunch. I'm lucky that I found that lump. When I got through to the hospital, they examined and scanned me and they found that it was a cyst, to which I was relieved. But luckily for me, they scanned both breasts, Brian. They found that I had breast cancer in the other breast and it was so deep in the tissue that I probably would not have even known it was there. And my annual mammogram would have been in 4 or 5 years' time and my prognosis would have been so different. So again, as I was saying about my ruptured Achilles helped with my heart attack, my heart attack actually saved my life because my breast cancer was found. So as much as I was a, can I swear?
Sure.
Yeah. So as much as I was a pain in the ass for cardio rehab and I was trouble at my GP surgery, and it when it came to the surgical team for the breast cancer, I was their nightmare because I was on ticagrelor, which is the heavy duty anti-clotting agent, plus aspirin and the whole host of everything else. I had had a heart attack only 2 months ago, and we have a protocol in the UK that if you have cancer, they try to get you through into treatment and within 2 weeks. So I was then stuck with the fact that I had the anaesthetist saying, I'm not having that bloody woman on my table. She'll die and have another heart attack. I've got the surgeon who is like, oh, no, it's fine. We'll be OK. We'll get this sorted. There's not a problem. I can deal with all the things. I'll just go and persuade the anaesthetist. luckily the anaesthetist put his foot down. I ended up on the operating table twice. Once because they were ready to go ahead, but I had to have a wire put in my breast to identify where the cancer actually was. And unfortunately, someone had actually forgotten to put it in. They put the dye in, but they hadn't put the wire in. And it took months before they were ready to actually do it. And my cardiologist and my breast cancer surgeon had to have a multidisciplinary meeting to work out what drugs I could stop and for how long and for how could they suppress the cancer growing while I was waiting for the surgery. And then I didn't have chemo, I had radiotherapy. So all in all, I have lived to tell the tale that 2016 may not have been a healthy year, but it was damn lucky for me. And what was so apparent was the moment I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I had two amazing breast care nurses that were by my side. They were there at the drop of a hat. If I rang, they answered the phone. If I needed to see them, they were there. They reassured me. I had massage therapy provided by the NHS. I had talking therapy. I had all sorts of support for my mental and emotional health that unfortunately was sadly lacking after my heart attack. So I did have a bit of a double whammy, mind you, because I was dealing still with the cardiac side of it, plus got the cancer diagnosis. But it stopped me in my tracks of feeling sorry for myself and feeling like a victim, because it then became my mission that, like you, I want to help people with that emotional side of recovery after a cardiac event, whether it be a heart attack, whether it be a cardiac arrest, whether it be a heart diagnosis. There is that time where emotionally, mentally, it's a shock, and PTSD is not something that doesn't happen. It really, really does. And I know you're a great believer in the Kubler-Ross change curve. And that, to me, is pretty much how it is. It is change, but it's in such a massive amount of change, and it is so quickly. Whereas with my breast cancer, it was quite slow. Well, it wasn't slow, but it was slow. So there was the mammogram, and then there was the ultrasound scans, and then there was the biopsy that they took of it, and da 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 da. But with the heart attack, it was just bang, and my life changed. So I'm on a mission. I'm there to support everybody. It's one of those invisible diseases. People say, "Oh, you look great," but actually, I can't do the housework. I can do the housework, don't get me wrong. Pushing the Hoover around my house is exhausting for me because my heart is damaged, and I'm not alone in that. So that's my story, Brian.
Yeah. So again, a couple of things. So thank you for sharing, and just, getting the double whammy, the breast cancer diagnosis. I just want to back up a little bit though. You talked about mindset, the importance of that, and how, for people that are watching, if you've newly had an event of the heart, whether it's a heart attack or cardiac arrest or, breast cancer diagnosis, the stress, the anxiety, the fear, the mental anguish, the depression you talked about, like these are all normal things. And they're not talked about enough, in my opinion, at least in my experience. And I know that's one of my missions, is to raise awareness to the mental health component. Because as you mentioned, you talked about the Kubler-Ross, like what for those, again, that are watching that haven't maybe watched many of my videos, these interviews, it's taking the five stages of grief, which are used for the loss of a loved one. And I've just kind of, I've taken that, and I call it grieving the loss of your old self. And like you said, like who you were before your heart attack, who you were before your breast cancer diagnosis, that all shifts and changes. And, you know, in a way, Sally, before your heart attack, died that day, even though you survived it. Old Sally's gone. And then the breast cancer, you know, Sally before breast cancer is gone. And now you're here, you know, and I love that you too have answered the call and are sharing your gift, your story, your learning through this with others to help support others, because it is common and it is important for people to be able to normalize and know that you know there is hope and it is going to be okay, and that having a heart attack, you know, it isn't a death sentence. Perhaps, like in your case, you are feeling the effects because of the fact you have the damage to your heart, but yet you're still here. You're still showing up every day for yourself and for the people that, you know, work with you. And it's really an incredible story, Sally. It really is. And I'm really honored for you to share it. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, when we look back on things like this, and, you know I've done it, and I'd like you to sort of share some of your reflections now, you know, because we're talking over 5 years ago, right, that this happened. What advice would you have, Sally, for somebody who is either newly diagnosed with cancer or somebody who's had a heart attack or an event of the heart, and the role that mindset can play for them?
So it's going to sound so simple, but it's to talk. It was a piece of it, and it isn't a psychobabble thing at all. It is talk to everybody and anybody. Share your story. Write your story out. I sat and wrote everything that had happened to me down. In fact, I sat and typed it rather than writing it by hand. But there is an enormous amount of therapeutic catharticness about getting it out there, because I think acceptance is really important. And by talking about it, by writing about it, you're bringing it out of that denial that you have of it couldn't really have happened to me. And by accepting and using breath work, and I know you love meditation is a really, really good tool. But it's about, if you can accept that it has happened, and like you said, it's not a death sentence. With cancer, there are so many different treatments. With a heart attack or heart health issues, it's what you believe. And in your early days, you haven't got much to believe about. You haven't got any energy. You haven't got a purpose, because it feels like nothing's going on. So my recommendation is to join Facebook groups or somebody like you on Instagram. Follow the interviews. Find like-minded people that have had similar experiences. I'm going to kind of say normalize it, but it's not that it should be normalized, but it's don't hide it. Don't, you know, some people are really embarrassed. It's stereotypical. I'm sorry, I'm kind of ranting on here, but there's that stereotypical of middle-aged male that's massively overweight and smokes. I'll put my hand up. I was a smoker. It's probably the only thing that was contributed. Well, I should say the only thing, because there's a genetic bit thing as well. But I didn't feel, you know, how can I say I've had a heart attack? And so it's those thought processes. But, you know, it's have hope and recognize that you can do anything that you put your mind to. So I've walked on hot coals. I did it post heart attack and breast cancer. It was so life affirming. It made me realize that I am bigger and braver and bolder, and even burning coals can't hold me back. Now, that's quite a big thing. It was an achievement. I had purpose. I did the training. I was fundraising at the same time. But find something small to start with. And for me, my starting off something small was being able to sit at my desk for 10 minutes and answer some emails. And that was exhausting at first. But I then got that feeling, in actual fact, it was a chemical reaction of dopamine released in my body because I had set my heart on doing something. I had achieved it, even if it was small. And that started to lift how I was feeling. But essentially, Brian, talk is the key thing.
It really is. And that's one of the reasons why I do what I do, to provide a platform for people to share their stories, to get it out, to release it. You know, you're not alone. For anybody who's watching who's maybe gone through this, we had a comment from Skatzer. She said, thank you for sharing. She gets really frustrated not being able to do the hoovering. And I'm going to have to guess that that means vacuuming. I know what a hoover is, but in Canada, we didn't call it hoovering, even though we have Hoover.
Hoover is the brand name of a UK
right, company. I know. But so vacuuming, and again, it is. And she says she gets frustrated. And, you know, again, she's just, you've reminded her to not push herself. And you've got to go slow, and you've got to be patient with yourself. And I think, you know, I have this saying that you know, sharing, you know, your story. So your story is the medicine that someone out there needs to receive. The medicine on your heart, quite literally, is something that someone out there needs to receive. And that's why I do this. And it's been really an honor to have you on today and share, you know, your story. You are meant to be here. I know we have a very similar sort of spiritual context in terms of how we view the world and our spirituality. And, you know, you've got work to do, and it's really great to see you embracing that and as I say, answering the call.
So there you go. That's just a little bit about me, and it was really good to feel like I could share that with you. If you want to, you can pop over to IGTV and follow Brian Simpson, the Heart Attack Thriver, and then you can actually watch it too. You'll see my dog knocking at the door, well, scratching at the door really, and then me having to get up and let her in. Anyway, just to let you know, there may be a couple of weeks now where there are no episodes. This is because mainly I'm going to be focusing on finishing off writing my book. The book's called The Basics of Heart Health Management at Home, and I'm writing it to help people when they first get home from hospital. And the second project that I've got on my radar is actually about starting a quit smoking group specifically for people who have a cardiac condition, because whilst it's been pretty easy for the majority of people to quit, sometimes some people just need that little bit extra help. So keep your eyes and ears open, and I'll share it all with you soon. Bye-bye for now. I hope you enjoyed the show today. And if you'd like to stay in touch, please pop over to Facebook and join me in the My Heart and Mind community, www.myheartandmind.co.uk/community. See you over there.
You've been listening to Sally Crawley and the My Heart and Mind podcast, a show for you if you've had a heart attack, cardiac event, or other life-changing experience and want to feel good. It's all about mastering your feelings and emotions so you can feel great and live the life you love. To find out more, visit www.myheartandmind.co.uk, and note that that's an AND and not the ampersand character. Go be magnificent.